You know, I think sabbatical is just a fancy word for not seeing people you love for 12 weeks. Like, that's lame. I don't know who thought this was a good idea, but I'm excited for a summer of hearing what God wants to say to me, but I'm sad for a summer where I don't see y'all all the time. So I'm excited to come back already. But before we do that, we have some more things to talk about when it comes to defining moments. And I want to, last few weeks, I've actually told you some stories from our lead pastor at South Harbor, Tim Wilson, our lead pastor at Fairhaven, Greg Vandermeer. I've been sharing some of their stories. And today I want to tell you a story about Tanner Smith, who's our lead pastor at Harbor Life. Tanner and I often spend time writing sermons together. I'm not exactly sure what parts are mine and what parts are his. I am just 100% sure that when we preach it, he always does a better job of that. So if you want to hear like sermons I preach only better, go listen to Tanner at Harbor Life because it just is better. But Tanner was telling me the story this week about a pop machine, about a soda machine. He used to be a counselor at Camp Geneva, which is over in Holland. And when you're a counselor at Camp Geneva, he was there in college, and they have all the little ones like call you uncle and aunt, right? So it's like, oh, Uncle Scott, this, right? You know, so that's how those kids relate to you. And so Tanner and his fellow counselors were really careful not to let the kids in their cabins drink soda during the weeks that they were there on camp because, you know, sugar makes them crazy, right? So they had this big soda machine, looks kind of like this, that they would unplug from the wall and just tell kids it's broken, right? So they're like, oh, I don't know, it's broken. And they're like, Uncle Tanner, I want to get a soda. Like, you can try, but, and it was, you know, it was broken. But the trick was that when the campers would go to bed at night or when they were gone over the weekend, the counselors would plug that back in so they could have soda, right? They would just unplug it, and then the next week they're like, oh, it doesn't work. So one day they had this experience where one of the counselors forgot to unplug the soda machine. And this kid came up to Tanner and he's like, Uncle Tanner, can I go try to get a soda? He's like, yeah, man, but you know, it's broken, right? He's like, I know, but I just want to try anyway. So the kid goes to the soda machine, grabs his like crumpled up dollar bill and does that thing where he smooths it on the corner, right? And he looks to heaven and slides his dollar bill in. And lo and behold, a Coke comes out, right? And the kid's mind is just blown, right? He grabs the soda. He goes running over to Tanner, and he says, Uncle Tanner, Uncle Tanner. He says, I prayed for a soda, and it worked. He says, God healed the machine. It's a miracle. But is it, right? But is it? So it all depends on your perspective, because for Tanner, that's just a mundane, dumb decision that somebody forgot to unplug the soda machine, and now all the kids in my cabin are going to get miracle sodas, right? And they're going to be crazy the rest of the night. And it's just a normal, everyday thing. But for this kid, the Lord in heaven just broke into his world and answered his prayer and provided him with the sugary nourishment that he so longly desired, right? For him, it's a miracle. God is actively changing his life in that very moment. But it all depends on your perspective, right? We've been talking about these defining moments. We've been talking about these moments in our lives where we stop what we're doing and we're going on in our everyday life and something just changes. Something just changes, right? We're on a new trajectory. Our life is now moving in a new direction. And I've heard from many of you how this has been like impacting you and you've been trying to recognize when God is doing some things in our life. But really what we haven't done is to address this underlying tension that comes when we talk about defining moments. It's an underlying tension that really asks us how we view the world around us. Let me explain it this way. As we've been talking about defining moments, some of us have experienced this conversation and we've thought about our defining moments as coincidences, right? Or happenstance or chance, right? Where we happen to be in the right place at the right time or maybe the wrong place at the wrong time. And what do we do with that? How do we grab onto those things? How do we react to this thing that has happened to us? Right? For some of us, we've talked about defining moments and we've thought about, okay, when the fork in the road happens, how do I make a good choice? Right? So for many of us, this sermon series has been really, honestly, a great self-help series. Right? It's talked about this, what do I do to make good choices when I have an option in front of me or when something happens to me? And if that's the case for you, then this has been a good self-help series. The best thing that you can hope for is for random events to go your way and for you to react wisely to them. That's one way to look at defining moments. Another way, a different way to understand the world, is to understand that in defining moments, our eyes are opened up to a God who's actually doing something with you and through you the whole time, right? So that we look at this this moment, and instead of catching us off guard, we realize that, oh, God has been driving the bus. God has been designing these experiences. God is trying to move me somewhere. So we have an option, right? We can look at these defining moments and view them as coincidence, or we can view them as miracle, right? A miracle is something that we experience that feels uncommon and doesn't seem to have an obvious cause. And again, sometimes we call those things accidents or being in the right place at the right time, or we can see that God is at work. Each of us has to then look at the way we view the world underneath this whole conversation about defining moments is a way I view the world. Is the world a place where things happen to me and I respond, the result of maybe luck? Or is the world a place where God is actually moving me forward, where God is actually interacting with me, is actually engaging me? Is there a storyteller that's writing a tale about the story we're living? So wherever you are this morning, I don't know how you come into this conversation. I don't know which one of those kind of worlds you think of, if one is easier to grab onto than the other. I want to ask us to just engage in a thought experiment together for about the next 20 minutes or so. And the experiment is this, that we would simply choose today to believe, at least for the next 20 minutes, to believe that there is a God who is active in your life, that he is moving your story forward on purpose through all kinds of ways, including ways which we would call miraculous. So again, I just want to ask you, even for the next 20 minutes, if we can think like that and see what happens. And to help us with that experiment, I want to read a story out of the Gospel of John, a story of a miracle. In fact, if you have a Bible and you open up to John 21, you're going to see a little heading that says the miracle of the miraculous catch of fish. And we're going to look at that story today out of John 21. And we'll have it up on the screen here too as we read through that. And this is how John tells that story. Afterward, Jesus appeared again to his disciples by the Sea of Galilee. It happened this way. Simon Peter, Thomas, also known as Didymus. We talked about Thomas a couple weeks ago. And Nathanael from Cana in Galilee, the sons of Zebedee, and two other disciples were together. I'm not sure who these other two guys are and why they didn't get a mention by John, but they don't get names for some reason. "I'm going out to fish," Simon Peter told them. And they said, "We'll go with you." So they went out and got in a boat, but that night they caught nothing. So the disciples, some of these guys are in a boat. You know, it's Thomas, it's John, it's Peter, a couple other guys, we don't know their names. They decide that in this moment, after the resurrection of Jesus and crucifixion of Jesus, they're confused on life and they're going to go fishing, right? They know how to fish. This is something that they know how to do. And Jesus is about to have a moment with them, a moment that's incredible, a moment that we call a miracle, and they don't know it yet. What they're doing is something that they're very used to doing, right? They're fishing. In this moment, they are fishermen. It's business as usual for these guys. They're fixing their nets. They're cleaning their nets. They're letting their nets down. They're pulling in fish. They're doing what they need to do. They're getting on with life. They're doing things that they have done thousands of times in very mundane details in their everyday life. Right? For many of us, we get that. Like for many of us, we go through life and it feels fairly mundane, right? We're going through the mundane details of life. And we, like these disciples, have no expectation that a miracle could happen any moment. They have no expectation that they're about to experience a defining moment in the least bit. And maybe we think about that. Maybe there are things in our life that we don't think that's ever going to change. I'm always going to be walking this road in this way, and nothing is going to change. Because we are consumed with tending to the mundane details. I heard a story about a young boy who was interested in learning the secret to happiness in life. What's the secret to life? What's the key to having a happy life and a fulfilling life? And the boy sets out looking for wise people who can tell him what the secret to life is. And he hears about a king. And the king has a great kingdom and a big palace, and he has been known to have the secret of happiness. So he goes to the king, and he says, tell me what the secret of the good life is, what the secret of happiness is. And the king goes to grab a spoon, and he hands it to the boy, and he puts a few drops of oil into the spoon. And he says to the boy, go and explore my palace. And while you're doing that, make sure you don't lose a drop of oil out of the spoon. So the boy walks the entire length of the palace. He's up the stairs, he's down the stairs, going through the hallways, weaving in and out of people. And he's got this spoon, right, with all of this close attention that he's paying to not spilling a drop like the king asked. And he finds himself back to the king, and the king says, well, what did you think about the art on the walls? He's like, did you meet any interesting people? Did you go see the sculpture garden? Did you taste any of the food? What do you think of my palace? And the boy says, I didn't see any of that, but I didn't lose a single drop out of the spoon. So the king nods and he says, okay, go again. And this time, taste some food. Talk to some people. Enjoy the art. See the sights. Experience all that this palace has to offer while you're here. So the boy sets out again, and this time he experiences many of these things, and he's engaging with people, and he's looking at all the sights, and he comes back to the king, and he shares what he saw, what has happened. And the king says, but where's the oil? And looking down, the boy noticed that the spoon is empty. And the king says to him, here's the key to the good life, to happiness. He says, it's to soak in all the miraculous, wondrous things around you without losing focus on the mundane. To find a way to go through your everyday life and not lose track of all the things that are happening, all the plates that you're spinning, and at the same time, have an eye towards the unexpected, towards the miracle that God could be doing in your life without over-focusing on the mundane. So as we start today, the question that we really want to be challenged with is to ask us, are we open to God actually intervening inside of our lives? Are we actually open to looking for where God is at work? Are you open to the miraculous, or are you simply focused on business as usual? All right, let's keep going in the story. So early in the morning, John writes, Jesus stood on the shore. But the disciples did not realize that it was Jesus. He called out to them, friends, haven't you any fish? No, they answered. He said, throw your net on the right side of the boat and you'll find some. When they did, they were unable to haul the net in because of the large number of fish. So here's where this miracle takes place. And here's what's really, really interesting to me about this story. Because these guys have been fishing all night long. After a lifetime of fishing, they know what they're doing, right? They're professional fishermen. They know how to do the job that they are doing. And yet they've let their nets down 100 times that night and nothing. Nothing. Jesus shows up, and he's about ready to change your life, right? Jesus shows up, and he's about ready to have this miracle that you wouldn't believe would happen. He's just got one thing for them to do, one big plot twist that'll blow your mind, that'll change the way they fish for the rest of your life, the secret that'll change everything. Hey, throw your net down, just do it again, right? On the other side this time, just do it over there. Like, do you really think these guys didn't put their net on that side of the boat at all that night? They spent all night long fishing on one side of the boat and went, well, we're not catching anything. They didn't try the other. Of course they did. Of course they did. Like, Jesus has this profound moment that seems very mundane, right? If this story took place in 2017, the writer would have to like spice this up a little bit for us to want to like click on this article and read, right? It's this phrase we use today in 2017 called clickbait, right? It's when you read a headline of a story and it's so fantastical that it draws you in and you want to click on it, right? I have a few examples that I read this week, like man tries to hug wild lion, you won't believe what happens next. Okay, either that cat just got really cuddly with the guy or he ripped his face off. Either way, I actually totally believe it, right? Or what about this one? A schoolgirl gives her lunch to a homeless man. What he did next will leave you in tears. I bet he cried and was really thankful, and it's really not that hard to put two and two together here, right? Or what about this one? Woman decides to eat healthy, exercise daily, drink 8 glasses of water every day. Doctors cannot explain what happened next. I probably can, actually. Like, the math isn't that hard, right? These are actually very mundane details in stories, but the headlines promise a miraculous moment. Jesus goes the opposite direction, right? Jesus gives them a very mundane headline. Hey, why don't you do that thing you already know how to do? In fact, that thing that you've been doing again and again and again, and yet a miraculous response is what takes place. Jesus offers them what seems so mundane and yet transforms it into something miraculous. Just do what you're doing, but do it again. So here's my point. When we think about defining moments that God breaks in, even if we're looking for them, defining moments where the miraculous happens, the key is that those don't require you to do anything miraculous. These guys did the thing they already knew how to do. The miraculous moment didn't require you to do anything miraculous. Jesus just asked them to do something that is already familiar, a thing they've already done a million times, and as a result, he did something miraculous with it. You don't have to do anything miraculous to experience Jesus doing miraculous things in your life. Sometimes we hope for change. Right? We think that we have to make a big gesture or a big change or a big step just to drive a miracle to happen. I'm going to sell everything I have and move to a different country, and then it'll all be fixed. But miracles aren't a magic trick, right? You can't trigger a defining moment in your life and force God to do something miraculous in your life. You can only recognize when God is at work in the things that you do every single day. What if you asked God to use your daily life to change you and you opened your eyes and expected something new? God might just do the miraculous with your mundane, everyday life. All right, well, let's finish the story a little bit here. As John keeps going, then the disciple whom Jesus loved, which is John, and he always refers to himself that way, which is a whole different story, right? John says to Peter, "It's the Lord." Remember, they were out in the boat and this thing happened and they had no idea who was out there. And suddenly John says, "Peter, it's the Lord, it's Jesus." And as soon as Simon Peter heard him say this, "It is the Lord," he wrapped his outer garment around him, for he had taken it off, and he jumped into the water. The other disciples followed in the boat, towing the net full of fish, for they were not far from the shore, about 100 yards. When they landed, they saw a fire of burning coals there with fish on it and some bread. Jesus said to them, "Bring some of the fish you have just caught." It's funny, as if he doesn't know how that all happened. "Oh, hey, bring some of that fish you just caught." "Oh, you mean all this, right?" So Simon Peter climbs back into the boat, dragged the net ashore, and it was full of large fish, 153. But even with so many, the net was not torn. Jesus said, "Come and have breakfast." And none of the disciples dared ask him, "Who are you?" They knew it was the Lord. Jesus came, he took the bread and gave it to them and did the same with the fish. They had a little communion supper at that moment. Now, this was the third time Jesus appeared to his disciples after he raised from the dead. So you have these disciples going about business as usual, not paying attention, not having an eye to say maybe God could do something miraculous in our life, doing things that they already knew how to do a million times, and a miracle happens. And it's at that moment where they go, "Oh, that's Jesus. Oh, that's the Lord." Sometimes we don't recognize that Jesus is right there working in our lives, standing just feet away until after. But let's notice about where Jesus is, because the Bible tells us that he's on shore about 100 yards away, not very far, right? Not very far, but that 100 yards makes all the difference. One biblical scholar talked about the landscape around the Sea of Galilee, and often when you would fish, you would keep somebody on shore because they can have a viewpoint into the water, what's underneath the boat, that the fishermen can't see. Because the sun is at a different angle and it's reflecting, or the waves. But the person on the shore can see things that the people in the boat can't see. Jesus isn't far away, but Jesus has a whole new perspective on their life that they do not have. Jesus sees things under the surface that they can't, both physically and spiritually. And I think for me, that's the challenge of dealing with defining moments. Like, that's the hardest thing for me to engage in when we experience these defining moments. It's believing that God sees something that I don't. It's a challenge for me because I'm 100% convinced that the best perspective on the world is the one that I'm standing in. That I have the best view on how the world works or doesn't work. That I have the best perspective on people's motivations. Why did they say what they said to me? Why didn't they do the thing that they said they were going to do? I think I know that I'm an expert in my own head. So when we talk about defining moments and God wanting to break in and do something miraculous, the challenge is believing I'm not the expert. That there is a God who can see something that I cannot see, and to trust that he can see it when I don't. Do I really believe that God can see something that I can't? This summer while I'm on sabbatical, I'm gonna do a few triathlon races. I've done a bunch of these in the past very slowly. I hope I can continue to do them very slowly. I like to do races where it doesn't matter what time you finish, just that you finish. Right? That's what I'm going to be doing a little bit this summer. But there's no way that I could ever pull off like the ultimate Ironman triathlon. Ironman triathlons are 2.4 miles of a swim, followed by 112 miles of biking, followed by 26.2 miles of running in a marathon. Like all in the same day. All in the same day. You do these people who do these races are some kind of special, right? They are special human beings whose bodies do things that mine do not, right? So, you know, in these big long races, they actually put cutoff times on these races because they say, hey, you should be able to finish this in 17 hours of racing. That's the cutoff time for a race. Because we got to like open the roads back up and do all this thing. So 17 hours after the race begins, you have to be done. Whether you've crossed the finish line or not, your race is over. You step off the course, they come collect you, and that's your day, right? So people spend months and years training for races like this so they can beat the cutoff time, right? They spend all this time swimming and biking and running day after day, mile after mile, hour after hour, so that they can finish the race. People train all the time just to get that accomplishment, because when you cross that line, like that's a moment, right? When you cross that line and that announcer says, you are an Ironman, that's a moment in your life where nothing is the same ever again. You can say you did this. But it doesn't always work out that way. I've got a little video here of a woman in an Ironman triathlon from 2013. Why don't we roll that video here as she is finishing the race. She is the last person on the course. It's past 17 hours. It's 17 hours and 8 minutes. And she is still out there finishing. The race director said, let this last one come in. And as she comes into this stadium, she can't even see the finish line. She's just putting one foot in front of the other. And yet everybody around her is starting to say, hey, you can do it. Right? We've got people running alongside of her. We've got all these people here after midnight, in the middle of the night, losing their minds for this last run. I love about that video. It's because most of the time we watch that video and we're focused on this woman, right? This last runner who's finishing. But I love the crowd in this moment, right? Because she is done, right? She is coming to the end. She doesn't even see the finish line. She thinks the race is over. She's 9 minutes past the cutoff time. And all she's doing is the same thing she's been doing all day long. I'm just gonna put one foot in front of the other. one foot in front of the other. But everybody else sees it. Everybody else sees this moment, right? This moment where this woman's about to accomplish her goal. This woman where she's about to become an Iron Man. This moment where she's about to cross the finish line. And they see it, and they're the ones calling it out of her. They're the ones who are cheering her on, saying, "You're almost there. You're not done. Your miracle is almost about to happen." In the middle of the night, they're going crazy. She's the last one left on the course, and they're cheering it on. Your life is about to change. And I love that picture because I think that's what God does. I can see God out there in the middle of that crowd going, "You're almost there. Don't stop doing what you're doing because your miracle is about to happen. Your life is about to be different from this moment on." Because some of us feel spent, right? Some of us relate that we've been running this race for what feels like 17 hours. I can't walk straight. I can't see straight. I'm just doing the thing. I'm just trying to put one more foot in front of the other. And in the middle of that moment, God's going, "You're almost there. There's a miracle right around the corner. There's a miracle just right around the corner. Don't stop until you experience it." When I read this story of these fishermen, I almost imagine this crowd of people, this crowd of lunatics who have been out there all day long, standing on the shore next to Jesus, just cheering these guys in the boat on, saying, "I know you guys have been out there and you've been catching nothing, but do it one more time. God's got something amazing, something you're not gonna believe. You're almost there, keep going. Just open your eyes and look, because God is seeing something that you don't see." And one of the biggest challenges of experiencing defining moments is for us to get out of our own perspective and really believe that God sees something that we don't see. To really believe that something in your life can actually change, even when it feels like it can't. Maybe it's time for you to believe that there's somebody who sees something you don't. Maybe it's time for you to listen to a different voice, a voice that says, "I know you've been in this for what feels like an eternity, but something is about to change, something just beneath the surface that you can't see yet." Defining moments are really a trust question. It's a challenge of trusting somebody else's, God's perspective more than our own. Do you really believe that Jesus sees something that you don't see? I do. I see it all the time. I see it happening in this church all the time. I mean, think about Ben. A year ago, Ben was a volunteer in our preschool ministry. And now he's the lead pastor of this church for 3 months. That's a miracle. That's a miracle. Right? Or think about Travis leading worship today. A year ago, we sent him off to plant a church in Africa, and now there's over 100 people that worship in this church every week. It's a miracle. Right? We're gonna do something crazy and vote on things like elders and deacons this morning, right? And there are people on that list who couldn't tell you where they were a year ago, when they were there a year ago, that they would never imagine they'd be here. One of them, I remember I baptized her 4 years ago, and now she's going to be an elder in our church, walking alongside of people, helping lead our church in a way that helps people find their way back to God. That's a miracle. God's doing that stuff all over in this place all the time. I've had a number of conversations with people over the last month or so where they've come up to me and they said, "Hey, it's been a year." I'm like, "A year of what?" They said, "I came here a year ago on this Sunday. I came on Easter. I came to Easter Palooza. I came to a service, and I just kept coming. I just kept coming back. And in that time, God has been changing me. God has been changing my husband, my wife, my family, my kids." Those are miracles. You might not be able to see it, but I do. God has so much more in store for us if we just trust a different viewpoint of what we're seeing. The question is, do we believe that God can do that? Do we want to believe in miracles, or do we want to live our life just doing the mundane and expecting nothing to change? So as we close today, I just want to leave you with two questions that challenge us in our level of trust, that challenge our perspective. And the first is this: do you trust that God sees something that you don't? Do you trust that God sees something in your family that you don't see? in your life that you don't see, in your marriage that you don't see? Could you just for a moment even believe and trust that God says, hey, just around the corner is a miracle? And second, are you willing to do what you already know how to do and ask God to work a miracle with the mundane? Can you faithfully walk in the places that you are and stand in the places that you are and look for God to do something unexpected? Are you willing to change your perspective and believe that even in the mundane, God can work a miracle and that your life can change? Let's pray. God, I am thankful for miracles. I'm thankful for the ways in which every single day you are working in our story. God, I pray that we would change our perspective. And instead of thinking of things as happenstance or coincidence or experiencing life just reactively, God, that we would be on the lookout for the ways in which you are moving and working and driving our story forward. God, I'm thankful for all of the miracles that you work every day in the lives of the people in this room and the lives of the people around us. God, I pray that you would soften our hearts and open our eyes to a God who sees more than what we see. God, would you give us your vision? Would you allow us to hear you calling out, we're almost there. You're almost to a moment that will be miraculous. I'm so thankful that you do that in my life, God, that you do that in the life of this church and those around us. God, would you change our perspective? In Jesus' name we pray.